Hola.
This is fun.
Yeah.
This is fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is brought you by Windy City Soul Club.
Did you just forget how to speak English?
Sure. Sometimes I do that. This is their 5-year anniversary mix.
Oh, we send that to you?
Yeah.
I would like to hear that.
You can download it. You can download it also off their like Facebook page or whatever, but I'll send it to you.
Okay. It's cool.
Local. If you guys did not know, I'm a big fan of the soul scene in Chicago.
I'm a fan. Probably not a big fan. I like to go to a soul night every two months, I think.
Well, it's definitely something that's been blowing up in Chicago. Like, soul nights are very cool places to go to.
But now they're not as cool as we've discussed before, I think, in probably the girls' podcast, the bro phenomenon at the empty bottle these days.
Uh-huh. It's,
I don't mind it. I think it's kind of, like, funny.
I do, too.
And
I like
entertaining.
It. There was, like, a very kind of interesting piece that came out on The Atlantic today that I saw. It was just basically... I like how the article started off with saying, like, bro has become such a nebulous term. It's kind of like hipster.
Yeah.
Like, what does that mean? I always say, like, oh, what does hipster mean? When people associate Urban Outfitters with, like, hipster culture, and Urban Outfitters is basically Gap.
Yeah,
it's on every corner. It's part of, like, you know, the zeitgeist.
Right.
It's like, so what is it, you know? It's funny how everyone complains about hipsters and it never admits to it. It's... hilarious to
Hi, this
me.
Is the podcast itself.
So this is the podcast itself. We're going to talk about fantasy books in a little bit.
But I've clearly done a terrible thing.
Let's rage for a second. It's hilarious to me when I go to the super like trendy bohemian coffee shop that I hang out at a lot. And I hear people who talk and act and look like hipsters completely diss like people... being hipsters, and I'm like, you guys are such
basically, you know, everybody's terrible. This is why I like to go to Caribou Coffee. I love coffee chains.
Yeah, you said that.
I think they're gonna make a big comeback the other way around. Though I was reading about Blue Bottle, that coffee shop. We've been listening to this, it got like millions of dollars in seed money, almost like a startup.
Blue Bottle.
I think it's just in California now. It's like right around all the tech startups, and it's like they're like the next. They're like the Starbucks of non-commercial coffee shops. Like, there's no Wi-Fi. There's, like, limited seating. Everything is, like, different. And, like, the coffee only comes in one size.
Coffee's blowing up.
But it's, like, millions of dollars. I don't know.
It's great. Because, like, Intelligentsia, which is adjacent to Logan Theater, they don't have... ports, like electrical sockets for you.
Yeah.
So they want you to like get out. And they have bar seating, so you can just like pull up to the bar and you drink your coffee and stuff. And it's a different concept, and I guess it's really cool.
I guess. I honestly always avoid it because I'm like, I need an outlet.
Yeah, I need to. No, this is like, I go there to, you know, read and get the right stuff and get stuff done. So for me, it's like a weird concept.
Right.
But it's doing really well. And then there's the Botrust Coffee Roasters, which is located adjacent to the Merchandise Mart, which is where, like, basically Chicago's tech hub is located with, like, 1871 and all those things. And the guy who started it, this guy named Seth Kravitz, actually is a tech guy himself. And he basically had a bunch of, like, tech startups. I think a couple failed. The one that he actually succeeded was called InsuranceAgents.com.
Okay.
And I don't know what exactly it did, but that's exactly, a lot of people get their start of like some weird niche website that they had, you know, and like, and then he just like leveraged it into opening a coffee business and it's blowing up.
Yeah.
So coffee and like tech are like really intermingling right now.
Yeah. I read, but back to the bro thing, I think it was on Gawker maybe, that Anatomy of the Bro, and it was like, did you read that? It was
in a different chart. Areas.
Yeah,
that's what I was reading.
Oh, okay.
I like how they started it off with like we can't really tell what the bro is, but then they're like, here's like a guide to maybe show and the bro.
While I was reading that, I identified very like clearly. I was like, yes, yes. Though yeah. I do have to say they gave a Midwest bro, which yeah. covers a huge swath of land. Yeah. And then they had a Dallas bro, and I was like, geez, where are you from? Probably yeah. Dallas.
I didn't read through all the bros, but I read the Chicago bro, and I thought it was like pretty hilariously on point.
I mean, yeah, you go to Wrigley.
Yeah. I mean, I dabble in the brosphere myself.
You do. Yeah. And if we're using hipster, you also dabble in the hipster sphere.
Oh, yeah, it's very much so. I would say...
you cannot be encapsulated with one word.
At least I admit to my hipsterdom. I admit I am, like, OG hipster.
I would agree with you, actually. I am none of these things. I do improv comedy, so I'm a loser that very few people want to hang out with. On to the podcast. You guys, did you enjoy the chapters this week? Because I did.
Yeah. It's great that we are continually hitting three at a time.
Yeah, I think that's good.
Of, like, well, I guess that's all three characters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we did it, which thank you.
It is. Thanks, Mr. Joe Abercrombie, for
doing that.
Cycling it that way.
It's really helpful for this podcast.
You know, it's weirdly, because, like, Game of Thrones, Song of Ice and Fire, like, George Martin, like, he has such. It really leapfrogs.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you could do. Yeah, you. Right. But then, right, you can go half a book, and then it'll be like Catelyn, Rob, Catelyn. Like,
and you're like, oh, bunched God, up. Stop with Catelyn.
So in that sense, it's like very unpredictable, and I guess in a way exciting as
it
well.
It is, because like you turn the page, and you're like, yes, I have a Jaime chapter, and then yeah. you look, and you've got such a long Catelyn chapter. And
right.
really bummed.
But you read the Jaime chapter, and you don't automatically expect that, oh, since I just had one, I won't have one for a while. Like,
yeah, that's
Because one can
true.
Come up like that, so.
I never know. And I tried really hard not to do the thing where, like, when I got a new book, to, like, skip ahead to see who would be chapter, like, do mm-hmm. that. I did it mm-hmm. a couple times, and I was like, yeah! I think when I first saw the Jaime chapter, I was really pumped.
Yeah, I mean, really. I would argue that Jamie's internal like thoughts and monologue are probably the most interesting of any character in the book.
I don't know because, if I would say like interesting.
Because I believe you don't get any until the second or third book. So when it finally happens,
yeah.
I think it was really, really captured.
But as it stands now, like his like actions have not as much consequence as like a lot of the other characters too. So it probably, like, he has more freedom to be, like, fun and less information-giving. But mm-hmm, let's get to mm-hmm. the book at hand.
Well, anything else did you do? Yeah, this week?
What happened this week? I'm trying to think. We had one nice day. Got to 67 degrees.
It was insane.
I walked to work, and I was sweating, and it was glorious.
I went outside and I started like re-cleaning up my car, which is like a lot of buffing the chrome, getting some of the rust off, repainting little parts, and it was all going according to plan, and apparently like the front left brake was making weird noises, so I got to take it to the shop, is a bummer, but
better just do
that,
it now.
Yeah, it's running.
Remember when you were going to sell that car like last summer?
Yeah, I'm actually going to sell it this time. I have a 1969 Oldsmobile Cutlass, if any of you guys are interested.
It's true, he does. It's cool.
Yeah.
It's got dice where the door the door locks are dice. That's my favorite part about your car.
It's got an avocado green interior and a matte black finish, and it looks like a murder mobile.
It feels mildly unsafe. But
no, it's pretty unsafe.
I've only been that one time we went to that brunch, which is funny, going to a brunch in that car.
Big Jones brunch.
We talked about it last time, and we're going to talk about it every time. Just go. Delicious until you go.
The boarding house chicken lunch at Big Jones is one of the finest meals I've ever had in my life. It is incredible. Do it.
Perfect. Four people was the perfect amount.
Yeah.
I think we finished it. Thanks mostly to you and Aaron.
Yeah. I think we did. I took like two or three pieces of chicken home, too.
Yeah.
So it was
so good.
Chicago value. Hashtag.
Hashtag. That's a really sexy hashtag.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think what else happened this week. Not much. I feel like it's like the calm before the storm of summer, you know?
Well, you know, it's like it's 40 now, which kind of sucks. But the simple fact that, so it was on record the coldest winter Chicago's ever had.
It's not cutting to the bone anymore.
The fact that really it's nice. Like, that you can just live outside. The fact that it's 40, you can function, is already a huge relief as far as I'm concerned.
That's very true. Yeah, I think that's pretty much it. You have anything? What? Anything exciting? You got the boat race coming up.
Oh, right. So Sunday is the boat race in the morning. It's Oxford versus Cambridge. It is the 160th boat race every year. The two universities race down to Thames. The race is about like 5 kilometers or something like that. And I think about 60 million people will watch it worldwide.
I watched it 2 years ago when all those shenanigans happened. Remember, I was in Ireland, and I was like, what?
Yeah,
and everybody in that household was like, this is stupid, because I was in Ireland.
So a guy jumped into the river and like stopped the race from happening. And these guys trained for like 9 months straight for this one race.
Maybe it's like you shouldn't waste your time doing it. Just kidding.
That's like the stupidest thing I've ever heard.
No, I just wanted to say it to make you angry.
I believe like half or more than half of these guys end up rowing for the Olympic teams.
Yeah.
So this is serious business. This is like, you know.
Okay, I'm sorry. It was a joke. Did I tell you I'm going to England later this year?
No.
I'm going to England. My friend's getting married. My English friend, in Nottingham, presumably near where, what's his name? What's the famous?
The sheriff?
Yep. Who's the guy, though?
What's his Kevin name? Costner.
Yep, she's marrying Kevin Costner in a very private ceremony.
Awesome.
Wait, why can't I think of it? Robin Hood.
Robin Hood.
Something about Robin Hood.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Kevin Costner was Robin Hood.
I never saw that version.
All right.
I only saw Robin Hood Men in Tights.
That's the best one. That's the one with the Bryan Adams song in the trailer.
The Kevin Costner one.
Yeah.
I was going to say, Robin Hood Men in Tights was all parody songs entirely. But anyways, guys, let's get to this book. Okay.
So.
An offer and a gift. That's what we start with, right?
No, on the list.
Oh, gosh. Okay, you should do this because I always get the wrong one. On the list.
On the list.
We know it's Glocka because he's asking rhetorical questions.
Yeah, right? For our favorite question.
He's the only guy that has italics, I believe.
Maybe.
I think he is.
Yeah. So why do I do this? And then we
go to the hilarious. I feel like this is such a caper scene. Like,
they're sneaking the around.
Three
like
best
a pink
buds.
Panther. On their tiptoes.
Yeah, so they're going to Willem Den Rob's townhouse.
Rob Stark's townhouse. Up in River North.
He would live in River North.
Right. And they're like, oh, cool, there's no one out. We can work undisturbed. This guy's got a light on in the window. He's probably just chilling out, like, you know, checking out BuzzFeed articles.
So this is one of the guys on the list of mercers that Glocka has been sent to torture or to kill. I was unsure. I kind of forgot. I think kill.
Okay, so it was never, they never, you know.
I think they were there maybe to torture.
I think torture.
That's their, like, game.
I think torture a little bit and sent to England, probably.
Yeah.
That's what they did with the first guy.
Yeah.
So that's probably, I think, their, you know.
Yeah, their MO.
Yeah.
Yeah, put the fear of God in them. But he has a whole list of them. Oh, yeah, because they're trying to make them talk. That's what it is.
They're trying to curb the power of the mercers, and they're trying to install their favorite guy from the Justice Department, or what department was he in? No, he was like from the taxes department. Yes,
the taxes.
Yeah,
okay.
I forgot what the exact name of it, but they were like trying to put him in. So they're like,
They definitely need to question. They need this guy alive because they spoiler alert, find him not so alive, along with everybody else on their list. But before we get there, I did love like. Severard and Practical Magic are like creeping, they're doing their thing, and Glock does just like what? He's like, God bless you.
Oh, thank you.
Glocka comes, and he knows he shouldn't be there because he's just like a lump on a log, but he wanted to feel the excitement of being alive. He's getting some motivation, and that makes me, like, you know, feel
He's got a job. And now he's, you know, his opportunity for advancement, and he's getting his hands dirty.
He's got the love of the game. But they find this guy dead as a doornail. My favorite part of this chapter, I don't think he'll be answering our questions, said Severard. No, I think he might be dead, but how did it happen? Frost fixed him with a pink eye and raised a white eyebrow. A poison? Everybody's a comedian. I really enjoyed that, and I think I laughed out loud. Clearly, so, the three of them have like, hey.
Yeah. And then everyone's like, yeah, the poison. So I was like, wait.
We knew he had a sense of humor.
No, does he have a sense of humor?
Yeah, it was a joke. Because he's slashed his throat. That's why they all laughed. It was
I know, a joke. But were they like. No, is this just weird or is he like so dumb?
No! No! He's not dumb. He's like a.
I literally thought it could go three ways. A. No, he said a joke. B. He's really, really dumb. Three. It's like an inside joke that he says. Everything's like poison, you know?
Severard spluttered with shrill laughter. Even Glockta allowed himself a chuckle. It was clearly like, you did a funny.
Right, no, that's good.
Yeah, it totally like undermined the severity of the whole thing, which I enjoyed. Yeah. I hope these guys become like three idiots.
No, it's funny. I just feel like a McNulty and like dollar guy in a murder scene.
Exactly. I don't know why I imagine his voice to be really high. Poison. Like, what's his name? That boxer, Mike Tyson. That's whose voice I picture when Practical Magic talks.
Yeah. I forgot who it was. Oh, it was my friend Alex, who's in the Navy now. He was telling a story how he was getting on a flight in O'Hare, and he was at McDonald's ordering, and in front of him was Mike Tyson ordering McDonald's.
At the O'Hare airport. Yeah,
the O'Hare airport. And then he started ordering in that voice, and Alex had like... He was trying for his life to not laugh out loud because he knew he could be pounded into the ground. He just started laughing.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
That's hilarious for a lot of reasons. I wonder what he ordered.
McFlurry. Yeah, I don't know.
Just definitely McFlurry.
50
McFlurry.
50 McNuggets.
Oh god. Okay. So, yeah, this chapter was like pretty much just telling us one thing. That somebody has seen the list that Ruse gave them of people that they need to torture and question, and that they're killing them all ahead of time. And they want us to think it's somebody from the Mercer's Guild. Like, they're getting these guys before these three can.
Yes.
But I feel like that, I don't know, that seems like so...
It is a, you know, that's like...
So straightforward to me.
It's a straightforward play, but when when Glockta went to talk to the Archlector...
Yeah, which is Archlector the second part of this
did not, chart. I would say, he didn't brush underneath the carpet.
No, but he also didn't get, like, super... He's the one that suggested the Mercers are cleaning up, are they? I don't know, he didn't seem, like, super...
So, Glockta's kind of... When he's presenting information, he's trying to also get a play on the Archlector's response.
Right.
And he's giving him, like, a little bit of information, and then, like, you know, you're trying to see how he deals with it. And funny, and aside to this entire conversation, there's a image of like, a drunk sailor guy in a boat in the river.
Yeah.
And he's, like, making it sway and everything, and then he's having the conversation.
He's a real funny guy.
Yeah, yeah. And then... And then the Archlector is like, okay, it's probably the Mercers, like someone like fucked this up, like you need to find the assassin and I want him found. And then it was the boat lurched wildly as the soldiers tried to haul their wet companion in, and then it suddenly turned right over, dumping them all into the water. So it's like
this is some sort of metaphor. Yes.
So basically, you know, it's a metaphor for like one person getting in trouble and then kind of like bringing the whole boat down, bringing the whole system down. But who's the person who's getting in the shit? Is it Glockta? Is it the Archlector? Who is it?
Well, I think that Glockta is clearly our like anti-hero slash hero, like our Tyrion. His motivations are, we know what they are. Like, I think it'd be really weird if they hid something from us about him. But then the Archlector gives him the plan to capture the assassin, which to me was like, whoa, that was really quick. That was really convenient that you're like, oh, okay, well, we'll keep on. We held on to what's his name. We thought we didn't actually send him to England. One, that's a little weird that they're like, we're going to send him. No, actually. I thought this might happen. I smell a rat.
Yeah.
Also, and, I forget who Superior Kaelin is because that's who Glockta suggests. Do you remember who that is?
Nope.
Okay, because the Archlector gets really mad when he suggests that, which. I don't know. I feel like Glockta is getting played a little bit.
He is. And obviously, so fast into this new mission, it's already going south, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it was like expedient. Like, so many things have happened. Position shifting. They just, like, you know, send people to freaking dungeons. You almost kill the guy, whatever. And, like, it's just happening way too fast. But Glockta is continuing to kind of keep one eye open.
Mm-hmm. Especially when... Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Sometimes the instance, when your gear and everything starts moving, you know, it's hard to...
Keep the big picture.
The fog of war is former defense secretary, you know...
Have you seen that movie?
Yeah.
So good.
It's good.
So good.
It's excellent.
That Philip Glass music makes it a million times better. But, well, to continue your boat metaphor... the guy falls in and Glockta says, a mistake, one should attend to the details, because the paddle, trips away. I feel like this is the larger, when you let one thing slip, the whole plan falls asunder. Perhaps Glockta is that paddle that's swimming downstream.
Right.
Maybe they should have killed him a long time ago. That's kind of what it seems to me. That's how they're setting this character up. But since they didn't, he's going to be their downfall.
Could be.
And then, at the very end of the chapter, we have this little interaction between Glockta and Lord Marshal Varys, who asks Glockta to come train... Jizal.
Jizal, right.
And Glockta's like, you're a dick in his head, but okay. So we're getting some intertwining of stories.
He is. In his head, he's hating on this guy super hard. But he has nothing but the nicest, most polite, you know, words to say to him. Which, like, kind of also shows you that Glockta is no dummy.
I feel like we're setting up, like, a Glockta and Jizal. They're gonna, like... It's gonna be like Dirty Dancing. They have to like work together and they hate each other at first, but then they're gonna realize that they like have a lot more in common than they thought, and they're gonna join together to defeat a common enemy, which is abortion. Spoiler alert.
So Glockta, internal thought of Lord Marshall is, you built your reputation on my success, then when I needed your help, you cut me off.
Burn.
So there is some history there.
Yeah. We'll find out later.
Yes, that is the Glockta chapter.
On the list.
It started out very kind of like suspenseful and then just kind of tapered off a little bit.
Well, weirdly enough, it started off with suspense that turned into be nothing, and then the end was like a very placid scene that turned out to be full of suspense.
Yeah, it reminds me of like one of those like spy movies where they're sitting next to the river on the bench because they're always doing that.
Well, they have to be in a public place, you know. Yada yada yada.
Yep.
An offer and a gift. Okay. This is.
So.
Go ahead.
Yeah, it starts off with another semi-specific, detailed training scene.
To be honest, I kind of gloss over these.
Yeah, it's the third or fourth one. So
I don't. It's hard for me to picture these things too because I don't. I mean, I know the terminology in theory, but I don't know what like parry actually means. So I just kind of was like do 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 do. And unless you have something to say, let's skip that over.
No, so in the Jizal keeps reiterates how he's super tired of the training.
I mean,
it's really wearing him down. And he had it reads, Jizal would never win the contest. No one expected him to, himself least of all. So he was never, let's say, overly optimistic, but this was just to the point where he was just like, I'm kind of over this, but I can't because...
They're setting him up as such an underdog to, like, win this thing. But then the best is when he's like, he wanted a big chair in the close council and to make big decisions. He wanted people to fawn and smile around him and hang on his every word. He wanted people to whisper, "There goes Lord Luthor." He's like a child.
Yeah. It is, but ambition wears many masks. Some people make it pretty far and earn a lot of money because the only thing that like drives them is just the fact that they just want more money and a promotion.
Yeah, that's probably like a lot of people.
Yeah, a lot of people. But so he doesn't need that's money. When you meet people who are like, you know, pretty successful, like, I don't know, in their field or whatever, and you talk to them and you're like, you're not exactly an Albert Einstein, right?
Well, it seems like
they just made the right moves because all he wanted was that corner office.
I feel like, I don't even know if that's the case with him because it seems like he doesn't even know what any of these things entail.
Yeah.
He wanted a big chair on the closed council. So far, the closed council seems terrifying.
Yeah. And like, but he still shows up to those training sessions every day and keeps his mouth shut for the most
part.
Yeah,
he's not that much. You're right. He's no Han Solo. I take that back, that comparison that I made a long time ago.
Lord Marshall gives him more training stuff to do, pisses me off, and Major West was apparently just like chilling out watching practice, and then he storms off.
He's like, I gotta go.
Yeah, and then he says, "Amazing though it may seem, there are bigger problems in the world than this." So West obviously is still reeling from that previous meeting with the council guy, whatever. He knows that stuff's cooking and he's off to deal with things.
Yeah. And then we have this, like, interlude where Giselle meets... He's, like, pissed that What's-His-Butt was mean to him. And he's just being bratty.
Yeah.
And he meets his fellow officer, Caspa, with his cousin. Yeah.
His incredibly boring and wealthy cousin.
Yeah, I get it. Like, he clearly is just thinking about Lady.
Yeah.
But to me, part of it was, like... So we've only had two women in this book so far, and this is one of them. And they treat her like she's the problem. Like, she's boring and she sucks. But, like, the problem is that their society is, like, set up to make, like, that women are a trend and a fashion. I don't know. I kind of felt bad for Lady Aris. I was like, poor broad.
And they didn't have much... Who's the other lady? The governess. Artie. The governess. Seemed like, you know, a Queen of Thorns character.
Well, mostly she just, like, wasn't bowing down before him.
Maybe she'll come into more of a light later, but...
I think it was more just him being, like, a woman that has a backbone. Yeah. A.K.A. he likes arty, barty, boo. Yeah. Anyways. So, we have this transition... Jalen Horn's like, yeah, she's super hot. Everybody wants to marry this rich lady. But now we're here at the open council. And they do a little bit of geography. I'm on 132. You learn where everybody sits. So the south, they've got Degaska, Westport. Those two places sound wildly different. Anglin, Sterickland, then Midderland in the heart of the Union. So we got all the place names of people that seem to matter. And that was helpful.
So this book doesn't really have a good
map.
Well, doesn't have a map, just in
maps
general,
are always
right?
Super helpful.
I'm actually flying through right now just to see if there's one like jammed in here somewhere.
I don't think so. Maybe we could look online.
Yeah. But you know, so in Game of Thrones, Song of Ice and Fire, whatever, the map is actually pretty important. There's strategic positions about which, you know, especially the stuff with the Riverlands, the Neck of the Fork, the Twins, the Crag, the Swamplands, and the Neck. Yeah. Like, it's like, you know, they really...
I mean, same with Lord of the Rings. It's, like, central. It's honestly, like...
But even... It's good to it's just... even more... It's so strategic that the Game of Thrones board game, which I have, it retains the actual, map of Westeros, and the same strategic points that are in the novels are the strategic points in the board game as well, which is pretty crazy.
Well, yeah. I mean, the board game's modeled after the... Books,
yeah, so but makes sense. It's not like they don't artificially say that.
I mean, I think that's the like I would still give the edge to like Tolkien, who created an entire language. Like, I mean, clearly he's, like, kind of one of the grandfathers of this trend. Like, he planned it all out before he wrote a word.
But, you know, you watch the map, and it's kind of like, oh, Mordor, and there's just, like, I don't know. Like,
there's so there's many like places.
20,000 orcs just sitting around in a field, and then they're like, oh, by the way, the southerners came. And there's, like, no southern thing on the map, and they just came. Well, they're like, you, we have elephants. Have We're from the south.
They're called Oliphants? Have you looked at the maps recently?
I have. I read all the books. I've looked at all the maps.
You really don't think that they're well-made maps?
I don't think they're as, like, tactically detailed as the Song of Ice and Fire maps.
Okay, you might be right. But specifically because this, it's called, like, the Game of Thrones. Clearly, like, that the fact that this whole thing's being motivated by, like, a geographical conflict makes sense as to why maybe it's more tactically advantageous, but in terms of like pure detail,
yeah, maybe. I don't know.
Worst thing is that we wish this book had a map.
Yeah,
shitty or not.
Well, yeah, and then you know, and then I wanted to mention like the Name of the One series. It also has a map, but it's very like kind of vague. You don't really like
it's
check
not really
it.
As important. It's more because it's just one guy's journey that it's kind of like fun to just sort of chart where he is rather than like actually.
So I guess like it could have. This book could have served like a little bit like that kind of a map to help out a little bit.
I'm sure somebody's made one online.
Yeah.
Which we will maybe.
I don't know. At this point, it's just not really.
Oops, I just looked at the last page.
Ruh-roh.
I know that one person doesn't die, but I won't say anything else. maybe they do at the end of that page. Anyways, okay, so we get the geography. Now we're in the open council, which is hot and boring and nothing cool ever happens. And the Lord Chamberlain rules it, and he's a big baby.
Yeah.
This is the only time I actually sympathize with Jizzle for having to just stand there.
So the lords show up to vote for these things, but like most of the time they don't even show up and they send proxies. And then it says it was poor attendance. The benches were less than half full. That was about as full as it ever got. So 50% attendance, even with proxies, it's just like a political system and people just don't give a fuck.
Yeah, it's like a. It's like an improv show on a Tuesday night. You got half full? Oh my god, you're really doing well.
That's why you gotta close off the last two rows to make the first two rows, you know,
nobody's
pack
in here.
That's right.
So, first we get like a series of people coming to speak. First one's Governor Lord Governor of Dagaska, who's just like, he's just, you know, little sickly fellow who can't say anything. Basically, he asks for money. Everybody freaks out. Same old story. Nobody wants to give anybody money.
Defense budget. He's asking for a defense budget. He says there have been attacks on shipping, harassment of traders, and demonstrations beyond our walls from the Gurkle.
The
Gurkle, The Gauska was built on a narrow peninsula and is attached to a land controlled entirely by our bitter enemies, the Gurkish, and separated from Midderland by wide leagues of salt water. So, this seems to be an important trading position, but they're basically surrounded by either water or enemy lands. And
like Israel.
Yeah, and they have very, very stout defenses, but it also seems like those defenses take a lot of money to maintain.
Yeah, it's like the wall. If we're going back to Game of Thrones.
Yeah, so for some reason, maybe because of the policies of the government kind of squeezing the trading, the mercers or whatever, like for some reason the money's not coming in that was expected and they need
Well, it
more
seems
money.
Like the after the war, the government gave the mercers really generous like tax breaks.
Yeah, and they're
and
like
that's what everybody's fighting over.
Right, right, and they were like with the agreement that they were supposed to help maintain the defenses and like pay for that stuff, and it seems to not be happening.
Okay, we might need to speed up a little bit. So this happens. Everybody is freaking out. Ooh, and then dun da da da. Hark, the herald angel sings. We get the first image of the king.
Right,
who
right, right.
is perhaps
Ooh.
Mentally challenged?
Yeah.
Like he fell off a horse or something.
No, like, very horror-ish almost.
Yeah, like, worse than any incompetent king I've ever read about, I think.
Not even ruthless or mean or just, like... Like a stupid... Like the kid, the Lord of Arryn. Just like a child character.
Yeah, but like... Yeah.
But like grown and fat.
Like so no reason... Like he's that kid as a kid. This guy... Yeah. This guy made me laugh.
This guy is just dim. And he's just brick-like.
Do you think that he came... I don't know if they actually say this. He came because the people from the north were coming. I think it was.
Yeah, it's like, you know, they're expecting like... peace terms or whatever, and like, well, I guess we got to cart in the king for this one.
Literally cart him in, because he's just freaking... He's like a...
On a palanquin.
Like a dumb dog.
Yeah.
Yeah, on a palanquin. So the king gets there. That provides some fun comic relief until dun-dun-dun-dun and the Northmen show up again, who we've seen already.
Oh, do we mention that he's very obese, apparently?
He's very obese, and he... Yeah, the description's great. He had great low jowls and a roll of fat around his neck. In fact, his whole face gave the appearance of having slightly melted and starting to run down off his skull. Such was the High King of the Union.
Wonderful.
Yeah, I don't know. Wouldn't want that guy on my money. But
like a Wendell, Lord Manderly kind of figure.
Oh.
But Lord Manderly was kind of a sharp guy, too.
Yeah, this guy, maybe, who knows, maybe he'll surprise us.
Yeah. He's playing the long con.
The real long con. So we got our two dudes who couldn't be different from the king in comportment, in that they have no title, really, except for, what's his name, something the Feared?
Fenris?
Fenris the Feared.
Fenris the Feared.
So we've got the translator and White-Eyed Hansel. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The other two guys did not come this time.
No.
So it's just the two instead of the four. Mm-hmm. And their offer is...
An offer and a gift. So the offer is, we'll give you peace. And the king's like, yay!
Yeah.
Then White Eye says, well, okay, one more thing, though. And the hooded man, Fenris, steps forward. England! England! And then he starts screaming, England? Oh, and that's what comes later. He takes off all of his robes.
So, yeah, so Jezahl noticed that he had a blue hand. So apparently he was very hooded. He had a hood on, he had a cloak, and so you couldn't see his skin, what he was wearing. And it turns out that when he unclasped his cloak, his whole left side from head to toe was covered in writing. So it was a rune-like tattoo that covered an entire half of his body, from his foot, everything. And it seemed also to have something to do with a magical kind of like aura spell. Like, and then when he walked by people, when he spoke, it made them
real scared.
Yeah, real scared.
Yeah, so it's like, so his bulging eyes twitched and blinked as they stared crazily around at assembly. His thin lips smiled and grimaced. So basically, like, to me, it was like his face was never still. Like, that's what they're describing, which is a creepy visual.
Yeah, like a crazy one eye kind of.
I was thinking of, immediately thought, remember?
Was it Bobcat Wolfgang?
Yeah, exactly. Just like that. Bobcat Goldthwait. No, I was thinking of, remember Daria, her dad, how his, like, eyes would pop out sometimes, and he would get all those crazy veins? I pictured him, but probably more terrifying. But yeah, so they're in one of the safest places ever. The king's there surrounded by guards, but Jezahl did not feel safe. Like you're saying, there's this magical aura that he casts over everybody, and then he just starts raising his tattooed fist, opening his chasm of a mouth, and a hideous spasm running over his face. England!
And they have to duel.
Oh, yeah.
Which...
he said you can avoid all of this.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And, you know, Game of Thrones also has a thing like this.
It's true. Though this one's higher stakes, because you're not just fighting
like
for your life.
Like, nation
for nation. Yeah.
The highest stakes, I believe it was presented for, like, those kind of high stakes in the books a couple times. I think Jaime Lannister challenged the Robb, like, straight up. I can't confirm. Okay. The higher stakes were, like, for example, when Sir Courtney Penrose, I believe, was the castellan of Storm's End, and Stannis was besieging it, uh-huh. and they were like, why don't we duel for it, for the castle? So that's like pretty high stakes.
Yeah.
But Stannis was like, no, it's cool, I got like sorcery and stuff. I'm gonna,
This is even more high stakes.
Yeah, this is for the whole shebang.
And like, so the guy's like, you know, doing his, making everybody scared, and he's looking around, everybody going, you. And then freaking Jizal, he makes eye contact with him, and then Jizal, to continue this hilarious theme we have going, he says, well, I would, but I'm terribly busy this afternoon, perhaps tomorrow, which sounds like the most English thing I've ever heard in my life.
I do have to say, like, even, like, British, like, officers and stuff, even when they were, like, in the trenches, they were like, well,
shall we have a sip of tea?
Cheerio, we must charge the no man's land.
keep calm and carry on is literally like, well, I'm all right. Anyways, so he does this, and people give him the old bravo. And clearly, I'm thinking maybe Jizal will have to fight this man, especially if he wins this contest.
This man who just, like, takes this, like, crazy dagger out and puts it through his arm and then takes it out and there's like blood everywhere, but it's like no scars, so there's like magics happening.
Yeah, but basically we find a little bit more about how England is part of the North, that Northmen have been living there, living free, and then they wanted iron, so the Union crossed the sea, slaughtered them, stole their land. The old, you know, tribal story we've heard again and again. So, at this point, I'm kind of on the side of Fenris the Fierce.
Well, it seemed as if the Union, you know, the Union's at, like, seems like a, I wouldn't say, like, one place is bad or whatever. It's just, like, the Union kept growing in power, it seemed like, kept compiling, like, more lands,
yeah,
and then
I've
just
met,
kind of expanded.
Everybody I've met like, in the Union, I'm like, ugh.
Yeah, so, like, I don't know, the, it's not, I wouldn't say, like, it's a good, bad system or whatever, but it just seems like, they took
like
this
England.
Land, and then, and then the North, they're just like, these guys look soft at this point, so good as time as any to, like, get,
I mean, my natural comparison is, like, the British Empire, and then, like, you've got, like, Scotland in the North, who's like, no, but we'll see.
Yeah.
So this chapter ends with the king slowly taking his hand from his face, because he was scared, and he whispers, when are the Northmen getting here?
Ba-dum-ching. Whoa.
Luckily, we meet.
What if that's just, like, the most hilarious king ever?
I know, he's, like, just trolling everybody. He decided just, a long time ago.
That, and then the court erupts in laughter.
So, the only thing that can kill Fenris the Fierce is mockery. Maybe that'll be the true solution.
Right.
So now we have the King of the Northmen, we finally get to meet. We're back with our buddy Logan and the magician. What is it called? The first of the Magi?
Malachi's
Squire. Well, that's the little guy.
Yeah.
So we have this, like, intro where Logan's like, Malachi's comes in, he's feeling better, Logan's feeling better. Malachi's asks him about how much death he's seen, and Logan goes, I hope I never see a lot of any death again, but then he does his grocery list. He has killed everybody.
Yeah.
I still think he's awesome, because he doesn't seem like a jerk.
Yeah. He slept outside, and then he's like, you know, when you have so much street cred, I guess it's, like, tough to keep it in, and then he just goes on this three-paragraph kind of, like, oof.
Can I say my favorite? A woman tried to stab me once for killing her husband, and I threw her down a well. That's probably the best
one. I was like, that sucks. I would have just rather gotten stabbed.
You would have just been like, sorry. No, that's the difference between you guys.
Oh, yeah. He said, I fought in three campaigns. 7 pitched battles, so that seems like a lot of battles to, like, come out of.
Mm-hmm.
Countless raids and skirmishes and desperate defenses, all sorts of weathers, middle of the night, fought in 10 single combats, and he won them all.
Oh, perhaps he'll be our fighter.
Yeah, that's 10. That's 10-0 record for all the marbles. That's pretty good, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you can't have any other record if you still have.
Right. Pissed myself with fear. I've begged for my life.
He's very honest. I like, we get to the end of it, and he thinks that Malachi's is never going to, like, look at him again. And he's like, oh, that's okay. Well, you know, you saved me. And then Logan's like, I've saved a man this year and only killed 4. I'm born again. And they both laughed for a while. There's a lot of weird humor in these three chapters.
Yeah.
Hilarious. It felt good.
It seemed like 1-4 was like a pretty decent like ratio for so far.
And then we get Baez, who comes in, who's clearly a bit of a hard ass on Malekith, and he's like, okay, buddy, you gotta go get to your desk.
Yeah.
Work on your things. And we have this whole long spiel about how Logan is happy it isn't like fighting. And then Baez tells him the King of the North is coming, so they better get a weapon. And it's like, oh, brother.
Yeah.
Here it goes again. Poor guy.
This reminded me of the scene in The Name of the Wind, the second book, where he's up north, and he's in that one place, like, picking out a sword. And there's, like, all the swords in the wall.
Oh, from those, like, silent...
Yeah.
Dudes. Yeah.
I don't want to say too much, but I remember that scene, and it was like Patrick Rothfuss like having like three pages of like poetry about how the sword like sang and spoke to him and had a name and like blah blah blah.
Picking out your Harry Potter, your wand in Harry Potter.
And this also had a similar. Baez did provide some eloquent language, the script describing, you know, the sword. It was about the sword has a voice when it was sheathed.
It's a hard word to say.
When it was half drawn, it was fully drawn, and he did so efficiently in about a page. So it was nice. I liked it.
Yeah, and then we got the name of the book again. The blade itself was dull, but its edge had a cold and frosty glint.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. And obviously Logan bypassed all the other weaponry for this bad boy.
Right, because... So this is kind of funny to me, because I was like, oh, it's like we're picking that video game character in the fantasy like video game.
I never played that.
Because it's like, you're always like... There's always the guy with, like, a spear, and he has the good reach, but it's, like, slow. He's slow.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have the guy with the battle axe, and the guy with the battle axe is always gigantic, and he's the most powerful blows, but like, then he's, like, clumsy.
What's his name? Versatile.
Yeah, like Robert. And then you always go with the sword guy, because he's versatile, and he's, like, kind
not
of
too
fast.
Big, not too small.
Right, and it's, like, every hero is always, like... The versatile
guy. Not Katniss Everdeen. She's got a bow and arrow.
Yeah.
Kudos to you, whoever wrote that. I forget. So he's got his weapon. And then it's kind of to set it off. Thank you, he says, I think. So now we're back to Logan being armed and in his natural state. Yeah. Though he doesn't really seem to relish it like so many of the other characters do.
Right.
They really relish their ability to hurt people, whereas Logan, not so much.
And then he notices that Baez is reading a book, and then I didn't pick up on this.
Yeah.
Perhaps. He was reading a book, and there was hundreds of other identical books lined neatly upon them.
Was this the same book, or one big book?
I didn't get it.
I couldn't figure that out.
So he says, it's all the same
book.
One book.
What does that mean?
But...
Is it one big book? I thought the same thing.
Yeah, is it one book with 100 different volumes?
Or
the same is it book one over... book, and then everyone has to memorize it and rewrite it themselves?
I think it might be the former, because one, Logan's eye scan across the thick white spines, that's a pretty damn long book. I think it has to be that, because like, he's looking at a bunch of different volumes. But then it's weird, because he's like, everyone has to make it. So,
and eventually make their own copy.
I guess that's. I mean, that seems like some sort of stupid wizard thing you'd have to do.
I just don't.
Because then he says, "What about that one?" And then there was another book, Sad Alone, and you're like, "Wait, so that's just one? That's just one book?" But this is clearly the black magic book that we're not allowed to look into.
Yes, because all of these. Thick white spines, and then this one was
black.
Yeah, large black book.
So let's assume this is a
hello
bunch of
obvious.
hello, hocus pocus. Is there an eyeball inlaid into it? Because I like that. Yeah, they're like, let's put this away for later. What if that's just his like wizard porn? He's like, you can't look at this book.
All right, it's just a porn book. He's like, this is nothing.
No, this is evil.
Let me put this away.
So he puts it away, and then Logan's the one that's like, Bethed is here, I think. No. Yeah, he is. He's the one that... Oh, because he sees him out the window. For a second, I thought he just knew. But yeah, he sees him out the window. So he's got a lady who Logan doesn't know, and then Scale, his bigger, bruder, burlier son.
Yeah.
And then they come in. Scale,
Beth's oldest son. We already have two gigantic berserker type guys.
Yeah, though this guy seems more like you could pull a fast one on him.
Yeah. They're both bad guys. They're both like monstrous mountain
characters. Yeah, his rock of a head. Yeah. Almost an afterthought on top of all that brawn, which made it a funny image. Yeah. Whereas the other guy was like scary looking. This guy seems like a funny big wall.
Yeah.
He's got a big
I wonder who's bigger. Practical Frost or Scale?
I picture Practical Frost to be like, not like brawny, just like large. Not like wide necessarily, because he's very quiet and he mm-hmm. can like sneak places, whereas this guy can't sneak into a guy's house late at night. This guy's more like a.
Yeah.
And then comes the lady. She's wearing a lot of eye makeup.
She's got some bangles and jewelry.
She sounds stupid looking.
Coming in looking like Stevie Nicks.
She's bleeding from the nose. She's high as fuck. And then. So the King of the Northmen, he looks the part completely, and I kept picturing, what's his name, the actor that plays Tywin Lannister. I couldn't help myself.
Oh, Charles Dance.
I was trying really not too hard not to, but, like, he seems like that kind of, or even, like, maybe, what's his name, the Scottish guy.
Yeah, I was picturing, like, a...
Sean Connery.
Sean Connery.
That's what I was thinking.
I was picturing, like, a... Like, nice little beard, curly hair.
You gotta give me, like, a famous person.
Yeah.
I pictured him older.
I was picturing, like, an older Robb Stark, because, gosh damn it, is the King of the Northmen.
Okay. I read this, though, I think the King Beyond the Wall more than the King of the Northmen.
That's a pretty good image, actually.
It's more so than, like, they're not in the actual kingdom. Mm-hmm, so he looked every inch a king, but Logan knew better. They echo that thing, like, five times.
Right, but he had rich colored cloth and rare white furs, and I thought he would walk in a little bit more, like, leathered.
I was picturing, like, Beyond the Wall, like, you have to make do with not necessarily like the nice stuff.
That's fine, yeah.
Okay, so we get this. Baez is... Everybody's kind of acting fake to each other.
Yeah. And the sorceress starts talking, and then it's kind of really similar to that spell, whatever, that Fenris the Feared was working with, and Logan's like, whoa, she has the voice of...
Beyonce. She's literally talking. Now, every time she speaks, I'm going to think she's talking like Beyonce. No, in Name of the Wind, he falls in love with what's her butt?
The Fae.
The
Fae lady, yeah.
It's kind of that, like, I feel like that is a very common trope.
But Baez is like, oh, you have the golden voice.
I don't care. Yeah, he's like, oh, you got your sorceress degree because you wore a lot of jewelry and some paint on your face.
And then,
burn. Have you came us here?
And then you listen to rumors a bunch of times and burn some incense.
Well, I mean, that album's awesome, so...
I have it.
I can't fault her for that. She
yeah,
did.
I mean, I got it on record, so...
So, he's making fun of her, and then Baez is making fun of... He's making fun of everybody. Scale's getting mad. Yeah. He's like, call my dad the king, kneel to him. And First of the Magi's like, no, nah, man.
And the fact that the king, you know, he's got like 20,000 troops, he's got Sorceress Lady, and they like roll up legit to like talk to him. Like, this Baez guy, who apparently looks like a butcher, apparently has still a lot of swing.
Yeah, like he's clearly very important to the
for
fact that they
some
come,
reason, yeah.
First of the Magi.
I know, but, you know, they're making fun of all the other Magi so far, so.
Well, that she's not a Magi, she's a sorceress.
Right.
I think
but the Magi like, that showed up to, like, the courts.
Yeah, well, he wasn't making fun of him.
The court. I'm just saying, like, the court was.
Yeah, but that makes me think there's... Yeah, they have, like, a secret...
So they were, like, whatever. But, like, these guys are, like, showing up to the Magi, and they're, like, you know, we need this
guy's
help.
Yeah, we bow
help,
down. Whatever. I mean, in a way, yeah, they're more respectful than what the other ones. So they give him a request. They're like, yo, bro,
You're going to roll with us, or you're going to roll against us.
You're going to roll into your grave. Yeah.
You're going to become part of the Rough Riders crew, or what?
Are you going to be the next Eve?
Are you gonna
She's in that, right?
You're
gonna and Baez is like, fine,
Are you going to be part of G Unit, or are you going to go off by yourself and become a solo artist, the game kind of situation?
Exactly. This is exactly what this is happening. Yeah. Beth apparently loves to give these choices, and then Baez is like, okay, fine, I'll be with you.
Yeah.
And Logan's upset, but like, yeah, in my head, I think everybody's head, we're like, okay, he's got his fingers crossed behind his back, clearly.
Right. Yeah, and then Beth's like, I'm going to invade England, surprise. And then
Baez is like, oh, real? Oh, for real?
Yeah, he's like, psych! He's like, guess what?
JK.
Totally lied. It's super hard.
Yeah, like, that was the quickest turn on his.
No, it was funny. It was super funny. I was like, that is super fast.
Yeah, that was. Didn't even like have time to tweet about it.
Yeah. He didn't even like try to play a hand. So
right,
he did not take a page out of the Littlefinger school of BSing. Like, Littlefinger would have played that to like the end.
I think wonder if Baez just thought he was coming there to like sort of be like, you have to be on my side, and be like, okay, fine, leave.
Yeah.
But then he drops this England bomb. I think it's a whole different story. I don't think Baez was expecting that. So he's just like, no, I'm out E5000. Let's see. And then
Stevie Nicks gets all like pissed off. She's clearly had too much to smoke before this.
She's like, you can't go your own way right out of here to the Union. And he's like,
oh. And then he does some, he uses the dark side of the force again to like shut her up, you know.
That's a common power.
He's like, you are not feeling well right now. And she's like, oh, she's like trying to hold on to a wall. Yeah.
She's being an idiot. I'm surprised what's-his-name Scale doesn't actually try to, like, hurt him.
Yeah.
But clearly, he probably knows not to, you know, like, but yeah. They kind of throw a glance at Logan, and they're like, yeah, that guy sucks.
Yeah.
Why are you hanging out with him? That's kind of
And then, Scale was like trying to get a little, you know, gingery. He's just like thinking about maybe throwing down, but Logan's apparently not that intimidated, and he's like, yo bro, better check yourself before you wreck yourself.
And even Bethod's like, yo, stop, don't be a jackass, we gotta get going.
Yeah,
you have piled. But he does say, Baez says, you have said you would bring peace to the north, and what have you done? You piled war on war. So, clearly, Baez is annoyed. Mm-hmm. So now we've got two enemies. And Nine Fingers, everybody hates him anyway. Like, that was no big surprise.
Right. So, you know, they're obviously making out Bethod to be, like, this villain character. But so far, I'm like, okay. So, he's got all these freaking clans. Mm-hmm. They're all gonna, like, fight each other and do, like, a civil war situation thing if he doesn't, like, invade this land that was apparently theirs up until 200 years ago.
Yeah, I do wonder.
So his, like, motivation for this is not, like, the worst motivation in the world.
Yeah, it seems, though, like, in previous chapters when Logan was saying that, like, they every so often the North crowns a new king. Like, it's, like, a regular thing that happens. It seems like they're probably just as, like, as much infighting as the Agrariant. Like, so far, the only people that seem cool morally are, weirdly enough, the guy that's killed the most people, Logan, and this magician who I don't know anything about and looks like a butcher. So, I've got questions. And Glockta, who also has tortured lots of people. It's kind of like Game of Thrones in that, like, the good people aren't good, etc. What is your bookmark? A picture of a lady?
It's the...
Oh, I see.
Capricorn.
Okay, sorry.
Yeah, I actually like lent a girl a book one time,
and it was like it was like
I handed it to her, and it had this in there, and she opened it, and she like looked at this, and her face was just like, "You son of a bitch! Like you're
two-timing me.
You're trying to like you know, like impress me and stuff, but giving me like a book that you really like, and it's got like a girl's photo in it."
Did you say turn it around?
And I'm like, yeah. I was like, turn it around. And then it was like it's a promotional sticker. Yeah. And then she's like, oh, okay.
That's pretty funny. I'd be like, what?
Yeah. So how many pages was that?
That was a lot. Actually, I don't know.
It wasn't like a lot. Like, this is a good pace that we should, you know.
Yeah, but we took a long time. We should probably end this podcast. Let's talk. So we got next week. We've got A Road Between Two Dentists.
Yeah.
Which, ooh, and look, there's a little picture, or like a little sword picture on 167.
Okay, so
Flatheads. That's gonna be good. Hold on, I'm just reading what we have. Okay. These are short.
Yeah, they're short.
Flatheads and The Course of True Love.
Yes.
Whoa.
So that's only 27 pages.
Oh, should we do an extra one? How dogs are trained?
And then if we do the four chapter, that'll only be...
Oh, yeah, that's really short.
So let's do four.
Okay. A Road Between Two Dentists, Flatheads, The Course of True Love, and what's the last one called? How to Train a Dog? How Dogs Are Trained.
How Dogs Are Trained.
Cool.
Yeah. So I think that's a good amount.
Sounds like an interesting
assortment.
Yeah. Sweet.
And, yep. So,
rate us on iTunes.
Please rate us on iTunes. Please share or whatever. And we haven't really done any Twitter or Facebook stuff, but we will do some this week.
Yeah.
And so sign up for that, please. And share with your friends. And
keep reading.
Keep reading. Okay. Let's do this.
Ooh.
See ya.